It's Manson Mitchell on the Weekend with Gary Manson, Suzanne Mitchell. A double shot of good conversation with great guests to power up your day. Manson Mitchell, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eric Kramer. Hi, everybody. Happy Saturday to you, wherever you may be. I'm Gary Mann.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
And we are in your ears for another hour here of a weekend. Hope your weekend's going well. And it's about to get better because of a special guest we have on today. How many times is this going to be for Shep Siegel?
Oh, you would ask me that. I'm gonna guess four.
Okay, I think that's the number we bandied about.
Yeah, I think it's his fourth visit.
Very good. We will be welcoming him shortly. But first, let's say hello to Odie. This is the first time we've
first
had
time.
A chance to work with this lady. She is our producer for the day. Odie, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited to be here. How are y'all doing this morning?
We're having
y'all,
a good time.
Where'd that y'all come from?
I just like to throw in y'all. I'm not Southern at all, but it's such a fun word.
Well, we're not Southern at all, but we live in Sarasota, Florida, which is pretty far south in the United States. And you are up there in Seattle.
Yes.
So we're only about 3,000 miles apart. And then we get a y'all. I think that's pretty terrific.
We'll count that as a bonus. Before we go any further.
Yes.
I want to thank Matt Shea and his radio cohorts, Skip and Sharon Line Gang, for a beautiful show that they turned in last Saturday in our stead.
Absolutely.
Matt Shea is one of those friends we have yet to meet in person.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, he does a great job every time he fills in. And as far as I'm concerned, Suzanne, Matt Shea and Skip and Sharon Line Gang form a synergy.
Yes,
it's more than just three people. It's like they just explode with this exuberant, loving energy, and it really comes across the airwaves.
Like 1 + 1 + 1 = 5.
Yeah, or something like that.
Something like that. Okay.
So thank you again, Matt Shea, for filling in. Thank you, Skip and Sharon. And off we go.
Off we go. We like this guy. We've got two of his books. The first book that we read is called Disruptive Play, The Trickster in Politics and Culture. Haven't read a book like that before. We were quite fascinated by it, and we interviewed the author a couple of times, and then he came out with a new book, Tricking Power into Performing Acts of Love, and we read that book, and then we had him on again. And there's just like an endless amount of information on a topic that I don't see a lot of other people covering. So, I think this is great that we are going to talk to this gentleman today about tricksterism. Why don't you go ahead and do his mad props, and then we'll bring him on.
Glad to do so. Shepard Siegel playfully trains his lens on politics and culture to suss out the trickster element as it has shown up, tickled society, and then just as quickly disappeared. His diverse academic background, degrees in music, career and technical education, special education, administration, and studies in anthropology equip his scholarly pursuits. His activism grows out of visions born in the bohemian counterculture of the San Francisco Bay Area. His presentations and talks have established him as a reliable and entertaining public intellectual on the subject of tricksters in politics and culture. He has a varied history as an activist, writer, musician, researcher, and prankster. He's written over 30 peer-reviewed and other journal articles, a textbook that enjoyed two editions, Career Ladders, Transition from High School to Adult Life, and the award-winning Disruptive Play, The Trickster in Politics and Culture, of which the Seattle Times said, Siegel's writing bursts with color and life. Kirkus Reviews wrote, Siegel's thesis is philosophically provocative and original, combining intellectual rigor with a bracing optimism. Born in Chicago, Siegel has lived the longest in the Bay Area and Seattle, where he now resides. Shepard Siegel, welcome once again.
Well, hello, y'all. How's it going?
Now, I know you're not from the South because we already discovered our Chicago roots together, Midwest roots. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Very good. We love talking about tricksterism. And, you know, when I was looking at it today, I was asking myself about this particular tack that you took. And in the big picture, I think you're just trying to make the world a better place.
Thank you. That really is that. And that is the theme of the public talks I'm giving now, that how the trickster helps us imagine a better world. And in a nutshell, the trickster archetype as it manifests can bring you to that threshold, but trickster is not going to tell you what that better world looks like, but gives you the opportunity to imagine it yourself.
Oh, I like that. I like that. In brief, if you had to define a trickster, and I'm sure you've done this like a million times, what would be the short handle for what is a trickster?
Well, one thing I like to say is that the grown-up who has retained the ability to be playful in the way that they were as a very small child will consciously or unconsciously engage with the trickster archetype. If I could say one other thing, that the trickster, as defined by Jung and others, is kind of pre-human consciousness, a character who just wants to have fun and stumbles from a state of moral indeterminacy. In other words, doesn't really know right and wrong, good and evil, but stumbles through life and will have an episode and a dilemma. And through that dilemma, the trickster moves from moral indeterminacy to moral discovery.
One of the things that is very evident from everything I've read in your books about tricksters is that they are not mean people. These are not people who are playing tricks to make somebody harm them in any way, except maybe harming their ego a little bit. But not physically, right?
Right. There, you know, in certain pranks, there can be collateral damage, but that is never the purpose. And I'm so glad you raised that now, because that's the questions I get right off the bat. A lot of people, they hear that word and they get defensive and they retreat because they confuse the trickster with the con artist. And the con artist wants to get your money, wants to get your vote, wants to get something from you. The only thing the trickster wants to get from you is laughter and the open consciousness, the open mind that comes with laughter. But also, as you suggested, they compulsively mock power. They see power as something to be made fun of and brought down, not through violence, but through mockery.
Yes. The other thing that I was reading in your book, and the reason I wanted to bring it up, is that you wrote that in the West, there is this conflation of tricksters with the devil. And you say that's not it at all either.
Correct. Because And for some people, I know the way some people define their own religious and moral beliefs is, if you're not good, the only other option is you must be evil. But I don't agree with that. And I think that there is, I mean, just look at, if you have a baby and the baby's under 2 years old, does the baby really know the difference between right and wrong and good and evil? The baby is in a trickster state, where they are stumbling in through life and through experience, they will hopefully come to their own decisions about what's good and right. And we can certainly tell this tale about Robert Johnson, the blues singer, and that we did previously. But there was something else you asked there, Suzanne, that also reminded me of that. But okay, let's just go to Robert Johnson, right? So this guy, he was a somewhat mediocre blues player, very early 1920s, and he wanted to be better, and he disappears for a while, and then nobody knows where he is. And then he comes back, and all of a sudden, he's the greatest blues player on his guitar and blues singer that anyone has ever heard. And so the legend is that he went to the Crossroads, and Crossroads is a place where the trickster is often called the God of the Crossroads, especially in New World manifestations of Eshuelegua. Eshuelegua being the West African trickster god. So the legend gets told that Robert Johnson made a deal with the devil, and he sold his soul to the devil, and the devil made him this greatest blues player ever. And that's because us Westerners love that good and evil kind of thing. But I believe if you're going to get into the mythical concepts here, that he did go to the crossroads, but he didn't meet the devil. He met Eshuelegua, or a new world manifestation of Eshu, and he received blessings. He didn't sell his soul. He received blessings, and those
Wow.
blessings gave him that power to play the blues so well.
Robert Johnson was featured in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou as part of his story, and that is one of my favorite movies. I love Oh
Oh,
Brother,
yeah, it's
Where
a
Art Thou?
wonderful movie.
Yeah.
And one of his most famous songs is, I went down to the crossroads, tried to flag a ride, which
Yep.
Cream, those are the you that remember the band Cream with Eric Clapton, that was one of their more well-known songs when they were popular, which
Did you
they
happen to,
go ahead.
did you happen to see the Academy Awards this year?
I sure did.
I saw a trickster at the Academy Awards. Do you remember when they were doing the award and there was when David Niven gave out the award
Oh
years
yeah, the
ago,
streaker.
there was a streaker, and so they were playing a trick this year by having a streaker, which was John Cena,
Yes.
only he didn't streak, and I don't even, I'm not even sure he was completely naked either.
Yeah, he was covering it up with his nose. It was hilarious. Wasn't that great? It was a pretty good program. They shook things up a lot. And my favorite movie, and I will be posting on this very soon on my website. You're from Chicago, so you remember the Wiener Wagon for Oscar Mayer Wieners, right?
Sure do. Sure
Yeah,
do.
that came to my neighborhood. So for those of you who don't know, it was this truck in the shape of a huge hot dog.
In a
And
bun.
huh?
In a bun. A
In a
hot dog in a
bun.
bun.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. And there was this guy. He was a person of small stature, and he would drive around and promote Oscar Mayer Wieners. So I'm just doing a little pun in my blog post. And if I were in charge of the Academy Awards, I would give the Oscar for Best Picture to Poor Things, which I think has a lot of the markings of the trickster in it. It's still a fairly new movie, so I don't want to slip into any spoilers because I want your listeners to stay tuned. But go see Poor Things. I just watched it last night for the second time, and it's
We
amazing.
haven't seen it for the first time, so we still have that to look forward to.
But without
Okay.
spoilers, Shep, what should we be looking, what should the viewer be looking for if the trickster element is kept in mind?
Well, certainly you would want to purchase my book and read it before watching the movie. But and it would help because in the more recent book, Tricking Power, I do a whole section on the female in the trickster. And because Because we have lived in a patriarchy so much, when you get to the folk tales and trickster tales, the trickster is often presented as a male. Now, tricksters switch gender all the time. You know, we've talked about Bugs Bunny, and you know, in all the Bugs Bunny cartoons, he cross dresses and seduces Elmer Fudd. In the Waktunkaga tales of the Winnebago tribe, the trickster changes gender so that he becomes she and she can get the good food that the chief has. So it was as a means of getting good food because they love food. So the fascinating thing about tricksters, if you think about them as pre-human, is they're not only morally indeterminate, they're sexually or gender indeterminate. They are all genders and they are no gender at all. And gender is simply another plaything for them. So all that said, I do an entire section in Tricking Power on the feminine in Trickster, which you have to work a lot harder and do a lot more research to get to that. Anyway, Poor Things, the star is Emma Stone. She won the Academy Award for Best Actress for her performance. And she has a lot of the characteristics that I describe in my books of what are the attributes of the trickster. I do a whole chapter called The 10 Attributes, but she doesn't fit it exactly. And so when we explore the feminine and the female in tricksterism, I have to kind of take a fresh look at our rules, you know, that we've come up with and how we've defined the attributes. And so this movie moves that conversation along because she checks many of the boxes, but not all of them. So, for example, she doesn't really play tricks. She's a brutally honest person. Nonetheless, she has so many of the other characteristics. So again, no spoilers really, but you know, tricksters, they love food and they love sex, and you will get a dose of both of those things in the movie.
You were mentioning about Bugs Bunny, and I can't imagine that we have any listeners who aren't intimately aware of Bugs Bunny because we have boomer culture predominantly listening to our show. Interesting, in a newsletter, you were talking about Blazing Saddles, and just the word Blazing Saddles starts you laughing. That was that is now 50 years old,
I know.
1974. And you talked about that and also talked about it being a movie, which was very much like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. And in reading your newsletter about it, I learned that Warner Brothers had some real concerns about even releasing the movie because of some of the very inappropriate, languaging that was going on, and it wouldn't have been a typical Warner Brothers kind of a movie.
Correct. And boy, yeah, to take that a step further, you need to trust Suzanne and me that in 1974, Disney wouldn't have touched it. Disney's getting a lot
No.
broader, but they wouldn't have touched it. And Warner Brothers was very nervous until it became the, I think, the number two box office success of that year. And they made a bunch of money. So they looked at it twice. Richard Pryor co-authored the screenplay, and he was going to play Bart, forget Bart's last name in Blazing Saddles, but the black cowboy. And there were some contractual reasons why Richard Pryor couldn't make it. And for those of you who are not only Bugs Bunny fans, but fans of Mel Brooks, this is the only film Mel Brooks did with Warner Brothers. All his other movies were with other studios. And frankly, you know, the N-word is used a lot in that film, which is really hard for some folks to watch and take in. But you have to consider the moment, 1974, Richard Pryor routines, as an example, never went more than two or three sentences without using it. And the whole point that Mel Brooks was making was to mock power and to ridicule folks who would dare to use that word. But it is like a Bugs Bunny cartoon, especially when the two heroes, what Gene Wilder and the, I apologize, the actor who plays Bart, his black partner, and they knock out unconscious some members of the Ku Klux Klan, and then they put their robes on, so they're impersonating members of the KKK, and then they trying to infiltrate, and of course Bart, who's black, you know, they see his hands coming out of the hood, you know, the white hooded thing that those guys wore, and then he goes, whoa, I think the line is, I guess I better make like Jesse Owens, and runs off, which is straight out of a cartoon.
Yes, Cleavon Little was the black actor there.
Thank you very much. Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. And he was Bart something, yeah, is his character. And I will say this to your audience. Listen, I can't see your audience, but I want you all who are listening to know I feel you. I feel you. And knowing that I'm talking to an audience where I can assume you know who Bugs Bunny was is great comfort to me. Because when I was writing Disruptive Play and I decided to do an in-depth profile of Bugs Bunny and the artist who created him. And this was in 2017 or so. So, you know, already seven years ago. I'm going, well, certainly Bugs Bunny is immortal. No matter how old you are, everybody knows Bugs Bunny and everybody always will. Well, silly me. Popular culture has just become so flooded with content and images and characters that if I'm talking to someone under 30 and I say, well, you know, Bugs Bunny, and they kind of stop and, you know, put their hand on their chin and, oh yeah, I've heard of Bugs Bunny. And, oh, but barely. Yes. So, yeah. So those pop culture icons who we thought or think of that will be with us forever, I traded in my Bugs Bunny t-shirt for a SpongeBob t-shirt, but I'm not even sure SpongeBob, you know, anybody under 20, cut right, because SpongeBob has been off the air for a while. But I got a great SpongeBob t-shirt to wear now. And it has helped me connect with the younger folks. But to your audience, I love you and thank you for remembering Bugs Bunny. Teach your children. Teach your children Bugs Bunny. He is the great American trickster.
There is an entire pantheon of characters who were given voice by the great Mel Blanc, and it astonishes me. There, I don't know a lot about Mel Blanc, but I do know that it actually, from the way he told it, as I recall, and this is many years ago, someone at a studio had it in for him or didn't think he was up to the job in some form or fashion, just didn't approve of hiring him, and that person died. And that opened a door for Mel Blanc, who gave us how many voices, how many memorable characters.
Almost all of them. And yeah. Oh, I did not know that story. And yeah, he was part of this team, you know, that. So some of you who have read Disruptive Play, or I may have spoken of it at another time, I discovered Bugs Bunny as a great trickster through my research on Waktunkaga. And Waktunkaga is the oldest story, period, known to humanity, and Wachtunkaga was the trickster god of the Winnebago tribe. And it was by reading a mid-1950s book by Paul Radin that I about Wachtunkaga. He was an anthropologist, so he is basically retelling these tales as he interviewed the elders of the Winnebagoes. And it was two-thirds of the way through the book that it dawned on me that this Wachtunkaga character was basically Bugs Bunny, a little more X-rated, but basically Bugs Bunny. And so then when I researched Bugs, I realized that there was this Mel Blanc, like you said, there was this team of writers, there were three different directors, Bob Clampett was one of them, and the names of the other two directors are escaping me right now, but Chuck Jones, famous cartoon directors. You had the greatest cartoon musical composer in Carl Stalling, and you had this gaggle of writers, and they had this sensibility collectively when they sat in their writer's room, and the ideas they would throw out and the ideas they would keep was based on this abstract, forgive me, but a cosmic, if you will, sensibility about who Bugs Bunny was, and would Bugs do this or would he do that? So like when Suzanne says, you know, they're not mean, Bugs, you know, he played tricks on people, but, you know, was pushing somebody off a cliff a mile up really mean? Because it's always,
they're a cartoon character.
If they're a cartoon or having an anvil drop on their head. So you could get away with a lot of stuff. So, you know, my point is, first of all, I'm not going to rule it out, but I doubt that the writer's room and the director and the composer and Mel Blanc were reading anthropological studies. And anyway, Bugs Bunny cartoons started in 1939, 1940, and the book about Wachtunkaga did not come out until the mid-50s. So that discovery for me added credibility to this idea of archetypes that are out there in our consciousness and that recur in multiple cultures and multiple forms. Most every culture has a trickster god of some kind. So I would say for the indigenous people of this nation, you guys talked about Kokopelli, you've got the raven here in the Pacific Northwest, you've got the coyote, and you have Wachtunkaga. We don't even know what Wachtunkaga, it was an animal or a human, and we think humanoid. But then in pop culture, trickster is really having a moment. And we're starting to see trickster consciousness, if not trickster characters, show up in modern movies. But to me, the origin in American pop culture is Bugs Bunny and maybe Buster Keaton, who goes back even farther than Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Our honored guest of the hour is Shepard Siegel, PhD, and we are talking about the role and the value of tricksters and trickster consciousness in society. We'll be back with more right after this short break. We are Manson Mitchell. Thank you for tuning in.
If you are ready to add certified hypnotherapist and certified past life regressionist to your credentials, Mary Lee LeBay is offering a 120-hour certification course online starting April 16. Invest 2 hours every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to noon for 10 weeks for your personal and professional growth. Receive a one-hour private hypnotherapy or past life session with Mary Lee and a copy of her latest book, Mastering Hypnotherapy, Transformational Strategies for Healers and Coaches. Manson Mitchell listeners save 20% by registering with coupon code RADIO20 for savings totaling over $1,000. This offer ends on March 16 for the general public and is extended to March 23 for listeners of this show. Go to MaryLeeLeBay.com and register today.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine with all your itinerary. We could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to manceandmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Mance and Mitchell show page at facebook.com/manceandmitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m. or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
Terry Loving wants to help you with your online marketing challenges right now. She has several courses she is giving away to help you get your business working for you online. Yes, giving away. WordPress websites are her specialty, yet her technical skills go way beyond that. Check out her blog at terryloving.com or email her directly at terry@terryloving.com. That's terry@terryloving.com.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.
Alternative Talk 1150, here to uplift your day.
Welcome back to Mance and Mitchell, and our guest this hour, Shepard Siegel, PhD. We love talking to Shep Siegel about tricksters and the trickster culture and trickster environment. We've mentioned his two books, but right now, Shep, I'd like you to not only talk about the books, but also your website and also a very special honor that you got for 2024 and 2025, and people can avail themselves of a very interesting opportunity. So I'm going to give you the floor to discuss how people can connect with you.
Well, thank you. You know, it was really like for me, winning the lottery, even better. It was a real dream come true. We every state in the union has a certain pot of federal money from the National Institute for the Humanities. And every state, I can't speak to how other states spend it, but here in Washington State, one of the things they do is something called a Speakers Bureau. And I auditioned for the Speakers Bureau, and that gives me the opportunity to go anywhere within the state and speak to groups. It has to be with a nonprofit organization or a public organization. My talks have to be free to the public, and then we encourage them to promote them. So I know I've got a big Washington State audience right now, and I have a few talks coming up. I'm going to be going to a couple of prisons. You're not invited to those. Well, there is a way you can get in, but
by invitation only.
Yeah, I mean, there are things you can do to get yourself in the audience, but I'm not recommending it at all. But on May 18th, for example, I'll be at the Sultan Library at noon. That's on a Saturday. Just this coming week, I'm flying out to Pullman, Washington. I'll be at Washington State University speaking to their political science club. In mid-July, you guys know where Clarkston is. right near the Idaho border, and the public library in Clarkston holds their speaking events in a winery. So that'll be fun. I think they're called Basalt Cellars in Clarkston. Get it? Right across the border is Lewiston. Lewiston and Clarkston. Get it? I get it.
Yeah.
I get it eventually. In September 19th, I'll be in Olympia, Washington, speaking to the World Affairs Council. It'd be lovely to see any of you folks listening at these, and you can catch up if you missed what I just said by going to humanities.org and click on Speakers Bureau. And I have 30 some odd other speakers in the Bureau alongside me, but I hope you'll look for mine. And the last thing I want to say is, if any of your listeners work at a public library or a high school or a university or any nonprofit that would be interested in having me as a speaker, this can be done at little to no cost to you. And if, as long as you're in the state of Washington and you're a nonprofit or public, I can come out there. I really, really want to talk to the kids in high school. And I'm working a couple of strategies, but those folks in our high schools work so hard and are so busy and have, because I used to work in it myself and have stuff coming at them left and right. So it's been a little difficult to get people's attention. But maybe there's a high school teacher in your audience, and maybe there's a few of them. And if they find what I say is interesting, I can adapt my talk to a class like an English class or a social studies class. Those two come to mind. Because of the way public education has gone, there are fewer electives available to kids. Because I could also go to a theater class and some electives that look at popular culture, for example. So thanks for that. Again, folks, humanities.org, and click on Speakers Bureau, and you can find out when and where I'll be speaking.
And your own website is?
Right.
Name of website.
Right. So the important thing is to spell my name correctly, and when in doubt, use an E. So it's Shepherd, just like the occupation, although first of all, no yellow pages anymore. Second of all, if you go to the internet looking for a shepherd, they're just, they're not around like they used to be, but that's how you spell it. If there are any sheep farmers out there, I know you know what I'm talking about. So Shepherd, Siegel, Siegel.com. ShepherdSiegel.com will get you there.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In fact, next week I'll be posting something about poor things. And if there's time today, I have something I'd love to read about Everything Everywhere All at Once, which has now been out long enough that I don't have to worry about spoilers.
Hey, it's your hour. You can talk about whatever you want
you
to talk
do that
about.
Right now.
Right now is good.
Okay, so getting into this, let me begin by talking a little bit more about archetypes, because as we started out the hour, we said, when you say the word trickster, people will conflate it with the con artist or the clown or the fool. And while there are similarities to all of those, the trickster is distinctive. Now you're going, what's this archetype baloney? I don't think about archetypes during the day, but let me suggest that you do. One of the more popular archetypes, especially in our country, is the warrior. And if I said, well, I've written a book about all the great generals in history and the battles they fought and the wars they've won, no further explanation needed. You, because of our culture, you would know exactly what I was talking about. But when I say I've written about another archetype called the trickster, and thank you to Gary and Suzanne, we have to take the time to really define it. And as you said in the beginning, Not too many people are writing books like these or writing about it, but I think it's of great value. So one of the other archetypes then is the what we used to call the mother, but we would now call it the parent. And the parent is someone who wants to bring order to things. And you can see that the word chaos gets thrown out there a lot now, that our times are very chaotic. And there was a prominent woman who was running for president recently, and she used to always use that word. Let's stop the chaos, said, it was Nikki Haley, right? She said, let's stop the chaos. And that was her platform. And I went, the parent archetype speaks. So you've got the warrior who thinks we can resolve our differences by defeating our adversary. You've got the parent who says, enough of the chaos, let's bring order. And you can't kill an archetype, and I'm not speaking against any of them. You need them all, and you can't kill them anyway. But all I'm saying is, let's try to understand the trickster and give the trickster a seat at the table. Now, in the world of the trickster, chaos is not a dirty word. Chaos is not necessarily about the society going crazy, but it's the chaos that the artist engages with when the artist is making an original new creation. Without that mental chaos going on inside, you're not going to come up with an interesting idea. So I say all that as a means of introducing my talk, part of my post about everything everywhere all at once. But it opens with a quote from someone I suspect your audience is very familiar with, and his name is David Bowie. So David Bowie said this: we live within this manifested idea of what should be form, and what we try and keep out of our existence is chaos, which is a very real part of our lives. And our refusal to accept chaos as being integral to our existence, I think, has been one of the greatest mistakes as a civilization that we've made. So you see what I'm saying? When you read research of other people who have, the trickster makes this world that came out in the late 80s, he says, you know, you can't suppress the trickster. And the trickster kind of represents a playful kind of chaos. And that's what the parent tries to do. And what the author says is, if you repress the trickster too much, you're going to pay a price for that. And that chaos will explode in a perhaps more unpleasant way. So what David Bowie is saying is, we have to kind of live with this and find a way to not be so uncomfortable with it. I think we know what happens when you have a power in society that is going to bring order and no more chaos, right? That can get scary too. Okay. I use that to introduce something I wrote about the film that won Best Picture a year ago called Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's been out for over 2 years now, so I'm going to assume enough of your listeners have heard it. And so I'll proceed. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I love the support and encouragement I get from you guys. The film, Everything Everywhere All at Once, explores multiple dimensions in more ways than we can count. The brilliance of the movie comes in part from how well it dances with the cliches and tropes of the science fiction, superhero, fantasy genres, without succumbing to the thud of predictable plots that plague so many of those films. So it's a trickster movie, as it plays the game of a genre film while at the same time playing with that game and transgresses, breaks the rules of that game. Is it a comedy or a family drama? Is it science fiction or is it fantasy? You gonna laugh or you gonna cry, or both? Are these people wonderful or are they terrible? Does it take the multiverse concept seriously, or does it make fun of it? None of the characters are particularly trickster-like. To the film's great credit, Trickster is more a spirit that hovers over the story. Trickster is the world in which the film occurs, the air that the characters breathe, the tricks that the multiverse plays, and this makes it important to our world. What do I mean by that? That, like Mr. David Bowie advises, we must come to terms with chaos. And tricksters of all stripes regularly and correctly accused of not taking anything seriously are our best suited guides to navigating stumbling through chaos. For example, Bugs Bunny. As we watch these earnest characters of Everything Everywhere, we still wonder, where's the grounding? What's the part that I'm supposed to take seriously? For most, perhaps the entire film, that part would seem to be there, but just as you think you've grasped it, oh, I get how there's this amazing world-building assortment of alternate universes. And then you don't get it. Oh, and in one of them, people have hot dog fingers. Much like the transience of playfulness itself, that slippery, elusive quality is the recurring trick in the movie. It's those punchlines, that teasing of the science fiction, superhero, or fantasy genres that make it satire. Trickster consciousness. Trickster consciousness is a world of fun where nothing gets taken seriously for long. Yet the trickster's journey is a stumble from moral indeterminacy to moral discovery. And Everything Everywhere All at Once ultimately resolves. Love through family can help heal the world of violence and war. But it's the playful trickster spirit that takes the characters on that journey. A great example of this is the climactic battle between the forces of good and evil. The tensions in the mother-daughter relationship extrapolate the adolescent perspective of the daughter, Joy, or Jobu, the actor's name is, her name is Stephanie Hsu, in a good versus bad struggle. As Jobu, she represents the villainy of nihilism. Nothing matters, so let's destroy the universe. And her mom, Evelyn, played by Michelle Yeoh, is struggling to be a good and accepting of her daughter's lesbian love life and to find a way to connect with her. For this ultimate battle, Hollywood would typically wheel out the CGI armies and fantasy weapons and do the kapow explosion thing. Everything Everywhere's satiric takedown of this gimmick aptly demonstrates the trickster's ability to trick power into performing acts of love. To not fight power with power, but to confound violence and conflict by fighting force with love and tricks. So Jamie Lee Curtis plays Deirdre Bobeirdre, and she attacks Evelyn, not with a lightsaber, but with the blade of a common office supply, a paper cutter. Hilarious. But before it can strike her neck, Evelyn blocks Deirdre's arm with her feet and reminds her that she is not unlovable, and then uses a martial arts move to get close and give her a nice big hug. Meanwhile, Jobu continues to head into the universe-destroying void known as the Everything Bagel. Her minions shoot at Evelyn, who stops a bullet before it hits her forehead and transforms the bullet into a googly eye. All the bullets are turned into googly eyes and slapped onto all the faces. So stupid, cries out Grandfather Gong Gong. The googly eyes riff off anti-war demonstrators putting daisies into gun barrels. Evelyn's dodging weapons and learning to fight with tricks and love. She turns two attackers heading for her into embracing lovers and transforms them into a bride and groom. The hand grenade about to be hurled at her, she turns into a perfume vial with a scent that makes the attacking soldier remember his beloved wife. Response to another attacker becomes a chiropractic adjustment. Yet another is fended off by giving him the BDSM treatment he secretly thought. All the fighters are rendered lovable so that Evelyn can get to Joy, her daughter, now in real life, retrieve her, pull her back from the void with love, with defensive kung fu that turns all attacks into loving embrace. And so the defeat is not of some adversary, but the defeat of fighting, of power, and of conflict itself, as the mother and daughter reclaim their love. Nothing matters is transformed from a declaration of suicidal nihilism into a triumph of freedom, of liberation, of having tricked power into performing acts of love. Has David Bowie's prescient wisdom finally seeped into our consciousness, our collective psyche? Here's a closing Bowie quote. I've always felt there's no real central one truth in life, that the way we live is trying to make sense of the endless vortex of fragments, that essentially we try and pull these weedy little truths and absolutes out of this kind of mindless chaos, which is the real universe.
Thank you.
Okay.
That was from the newsletter, but it also gives everybody an idea of the kinds of things that you write about, not only in your newsletter, but in your books as well. So I appreciate you doing that.
And I thought that movie was just so brilliant because, like I said, none of the characters were tricksters, but the world that they lived in was. And so I tell stories about Bugs Bunny, about Robert Johnson, about Mae West, Buster Keaton, Yoko Ono, Sacha Baron Cohen, and I do that to help people understand the concept, but I'm not trying to get people to fall in love with these trickster heroes, if you will. The point of me sharing them is to encourage a sensibility, a consciousness of it that isn't attributed to a person, but to the way we are in the world. We've got the warrior thing down.
Yes.
We're really good at that.
Yes. You say make room in our psyches for tricksters in order to make a better world. So
right.
it trickster needs to be one of the archetypes we go to, not just the warrior in a road rage on the road, but actually look for using the trickster archetype in order to make things a little bit better.
Yes.
So
yes. And connected to that is comedy. So where's the connection with comedy? When you tell a joke, if it's a good joke, you're going, yeah, the world is this way and this way and this way, and your audience is nodding and go, yeah, I get the references, I get it. And then you get to the punchline. What's the punchline? The punchline is, surprise you, the world is not the way you thought it was. The world does not have to be the way we assume it is. And thus, the portal is opened.
Shepard Siegel is the author of Tricking Power into Performing Acts of Love, How Tricksters Through History Have Changed the World. Shep Siegel, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure, and we learn a lot from you, sir.
Listen, I love being here. I can't get the clock on my screen. I didn't realize our time was up. It always goes so fast.
It does go fast when you're on. We always have a great conversation, and we'll do it again.
There's
always more to talk about with tricksters, and always more tricksters to discuss in detail. So we will be sure to have you back. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
It was a pleasure.
Join us next week. We'll do this all over again.
Until then, everybody, have yourselves a great weekend and a great week ahead.
Here's what's coming up next week on Manson Mitchell.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.